Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Wake Up Mission Show with your host, Shalene Nightingale and Randy D.
Randy with the Wake Up Mission Radio Show. We are the underground network connecting the dots for liberty. Today is Tuesday, September the 1st, 2015. Shalene's not going to be with us today, nor will she be with us the rest of the week, as far as I understand. So please keep her and her family in your prayers.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Mission Show.
And we're back. Today, we have, you know, we're really honored to have Commander Charles Kirchner and his attorney, Mr. Mario Acuzzo. I hope I got that right. And you guys have a pretty interesting story to tell our listeners. Just a little bit of background, if you will. Commander Kirchner is a Navy veteran, has a very impressive resume, spent quite a number of years in the Navy and in the reserves. And, you know, just reading, you know, I know you took your oath of office very seriously, you know, as anyone should. And, you know, I commend you for your service to our country and for what you've done since then. So, welcome, guys. Thanks for joining us tonight. How are you both doing?
I'm doing fine. This is Commander Kirchner.
Hello, Randy, and hello to your listeners. This is Mario Puzo. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me and Commander Kirchner on your show.
Well, it's my honor. My dad was in the Navy. He served on the Ticonderoga back in the day. I'm sure you've heard of that ship, right?
Well, I'm kind of old, Ticonderoga. That reminds me of the battle up there in New York, but I do remember the ship, yes.
I think they probably named it after that fort. He was like 1950s, and I think they mothballed it, you know, back in the 60s.
Yeah, was that a missile cruiser?
No, it was an aircraft carrier, CVA-14.
I misidentified it. Sorry about that.
Well, no, that's okay. No worries. It was a long time ago, but, you know, I do thank you for your service, Commander Kirchner. And anyways, you're both aware that I've been having some issues with my computer today. So I was reading, you know, through the, you know, your interview that you did earlier. And I'd kind of like to go in fresh. You know, I don't want to ask the same questions that the original interview was, because I don't want to be a copycat. But tell our listeners, you were concerned about the 2008 presidential election, and just to bring everybody up to speed, what prompted you to get involved and research and, you know, share the findings with the listeners that you came up with?
Is that for me or for Mario?
I guess that would be for you, because
I was the one who the lead plaintiff, the one that started it with, found Mario, and of course he's been a tremendous asset. One other point I wanted to throw out there real quick, though, is I understand that the show tonight was going to be a debate between some what we call cruise bots, but I guess they're not going to show up. They didn't decide to not show up once they heard Mario and I were going to be the on the side that saying that they Ted Cruz is not a natural born citizen. But we're here again like deja vu, where we were in 2008 with Obama not being a natural born citizen, not being eligible to be president. And here we are again now. The political parties are putting forward an ineligible candidates again with Ted Cruz, Bobby Jindal, and Marco Rubio. The three examples, for example. And we got a de facto usurper in the White House. But back in 2008, we had a man we didn't know for sure where he was born. And we knew his father was not a U.S. citizen. Not even an immigrant to this country, just a temporary here on a student visa, and went back to Kenya. And we never before have had a person who succeeded in getting into the Oval Office whose father never even was an immigrant, never even a legal permanent resident of this country. I mean, it's just unheard of that he could be considered a natural-born citizen, because under the natural law that the founders and framers used to get that term, because they wanted somebody with sole allegiance to this country for their future presidents, you have to be born in the USA to two U.S. citizen parents to be a natural-born citizen under the natural law. And Obama clearly doesn't have a citizen father, and neither does Ted Cruz, so they're alike in that respect. We know for sure Ted Cruz was born in Canada. And we don't know to this day for sure where the hell Obama was born. He's got forged documents all over the place. So maybe Mario wants to throw something in there too, but that's where we started in 2008, and now we're facing it again with Ted Cruz.
Clearly, Mr. Obama is not a natural-born citizen. I just want to get this out to your listener. Neither is Ted Cruz, neither is Bobby Jindal, and neither is Marco Rubio. It doesn't matter that they could have been born in the United States. Under the common law definition of a natural-born citizen, which was adopted or incorporated out of the Law of Nations, Emir de Vattel in the Law of Nations, 1758, he defined the citizens and the natives and the natural-born citizens born in the country to citizen parents.
Plural.
Well, back then there was no one parent, a citizen, one parent, an alien.
The wife was automatically the same as the husband.
They called it the coverture in the common law. They united into the husband, so that you always had either two citizen parents or two aliens. So none of this thing about one parent. Now, if you ever you see statements saying the father, well, because that's because that's how the wife obtained her citizenship was through the husband, but they both still were citizens. It's not like one was. It was unheard of to have a split like that, because then you would have a family which split allegiance, split citizenships. It just didn't make matters. Didn't make any sense. So everything was united. The mother and father
The intent, Mario, I'm sure you'd agree, was that when a child, on a natural-born citizen definition, a child wouldn't be born a dual citizen of any country.
No, absolutely not. It was unheard of to have a dual citizenship. And, in fact, our current government still does not recognize it officially. They just don't do anything about it. They don't say anything about it because of the politics. You know, today everything is, you know, feel good, help everybody out type thing. You know, we're supposed to have a constitution that's a suicide pact. And in the meantime, you know, we're damaging our own nation, our own identity, our own sovereignty, you know, letting anybody come in and, you know, actually like go into our streets and protest. I mean, these are people that are here illegally and they're protesting for rights. It's just unbelievable.
The people with La Raza, they want to reclaim the southwestern PA, and they call us racist, but the word La Raza means the race. So who's the racist?
Trust me, I know. I lived in Los Angeles for 20 years, and that's actually where Shalene and I met, was at the you know, the illegal immigration rallies back in like 2005 and 2006 and 2007. And trust me, when you talk about that, you're preaching to the choir.
Mario and I have always said, this is not about race, this is not about political parties, this is not about politics. This is about the U.S. Constitution and constitutional and natural law, and what the founders and framers intended when they chose that term of natural-born citizen. They knew exactly what it meant back there, because they were reading Vattel, they were reading the Bible. A natural-born citizen is somebody, a child born with sole allegiance to one country. And for the future presidents, they did not want anybody that had allegiance to another country or a dual citizenship. And we know for a fact that Ted Cruz was born in Canada with Canadian citizenship and U.S. citizenship by statutory law from his mother, so he was born a dual citizen.
And Cuban.
And Obama was, too. He admitted that he was a dual citizen at birth.
Right.
Very important to emphasize. We know that we're right in what we're saying, what Charlie and I are saying, because the Congress, our first Congress, 1790, passed the first Naturalization Act. Another one in 1795, another one in 1802, then later on 1855. But all those Naturalization Acts treats children born in the United States as aliens. They only became citizens when their fathers naturalized, which meant the parents naturalized. Mm-hmm. So that confirms right there that just being born in the United States was not sufficient, not even to make a citizen, let alone a natural-born citizen. Later on, we have the problem of, we revisit citizenship because of what happened with the slaves, with the Dred Scott decision in 1857. Then we have, the Civil War. We have the Civil Rights Act of 1868. Then, of course, the 14th Amendment. So all those happening.
The Civil Rights Act, doesn't that specifically define what a natural-born citizen is, or is that that says that the natural-born citizens are those born in the country of parents who – how does that word? Do you remember that exactly? That law is still on the books, too. It says that you've got to be born here not of alien parents or something like that, right?
Well, what it says is born in the United States and not subject to any foreign power, end of quote.
Right.
Not subject to any foreign power. But it doesn't say you're a natural-born citizen. It just says you're a citizen of the United States.
Okay.
So even if – because they weren't born to citizen parents. We're talking about now the slaves, the freed slaves. Their parents were still slaves.
Right. They were stuck in a cycle since their parents were never citizens. They couldn't be citizens.
Right. So then what happened is they were made citizens. They were naturalized through the Civil Rights Act. And then the Constitution constitutionalized it.
And then their children, by being born in the USA subsequently, would be natural-born children.
Right, absolutely correct. So once that first generation became citizens, then they could have children born here, and they could become natural-born citizens.
To be eligible, you got to be a second-generation American by both parents born in the USA.
And neither does the 14th Amendment say natural-born citizen. It just says citizen, just like the Civil Rights Act of 1868.
And it says subject to the jurisdiction thereof, and that people try to say that means jurisdiction thereof means geographic jurisdiction, but that'd be like saying born in the USA, subject to be born in the USA. That'd be duplication of words, and they wouldn't have done that. They meant legal, political, full jurisdiction of the USA, meaning you had to be at least born here. Your parents had to be subject to the political jurisdiction of the United States, correct?
That particular amendment causes a lot of problems because of the word jurisdiction. Again, it was supposed to constitutionalize the Civil Rights Act, and that talked about not being subject to any foreign power.
Right.
Okay, now that's a high standard, because if you're born to alien parents, clearly you're born subject to a foreign power. Then the question is, why did Congress change it to jurisdiction? Did they intend to make it a lesser of a standard? Or, does jurisdiction really mean allegiance? Okay, does it really mean allegiance? So that's what this all this argument is about today. But
that's
regardless
right.
of what the answer to that is, it doesn't matter, because Congress can change all that through the amendment itself. Congress is given the power to enforce that particular amendment. They did it for American Indians in the
20s. Yeah, they could just define what subject of jurisdiction thereof means. That's all
right.
They have to do.
Yeah, which they did for the American Indians in the 20s. They passed a statute which made them citizens. In other words, they said, okay, you're subject to the jurisdiction now, so now you're a citizen.
Yeah.
So
now, 14th Amendment, we know, is all it's very, very, very germane to birthright citizenship and all those arguments today. But you will agree, Mario, that the 14th Amendment did nothing to alter Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 about natural-born citizenship.
Absolutely correct, Commander. And that's very important because, let me just make
whenever you change
points.
Something in the Constitution that retroactively affects another part, they say so. They did.
Yeah, what happens is there's two cases, both Minor versus Happersett, that's 1875, and U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark, 1898. There are two very important cases on citizenship and natural-born citizenship. Both of those decisions clearly, unequivocally say that the clause natural-born citizen is not defined by the Constitution, which included the 14th Amendment at that time. It clearly says it.
It actually said what the definition was, unequivocally what it was, and that you had to seek meaning elsewhere, correct? Something like
exactly.
that?
Exactly. And that elsewhere was the common law. Now, there's a lot of confusion about what this common law is. If you read Minor, it's clearly not the English
common
law.
The common law of the United States, not of England.
Right. It can't be the English common law because the court said that children who are born in a country to citizen parents are natural-born citizens, and all the rest of the people are aliens or foreigners.
Right.
Under the English common law, it didn't matter if you were born to alien parents, as long as they were not foreign diplomats or military invaders.
They wanted subjects to man their warship. They didn't care if you agreed with them or not. They wanted to claim you if you were born in their soil, period.
Yes, and not only did they want to claim you, but they wanted to claim you for life.
Right.
For life, okay, which is totally
citizens are a two-way street going back to Roman law.
Yeah, if you look back to the Roman law, they said born in the country to two Roman citizens. They actually said two Roman citizens, you know, mother and father. And the mother could be an alien, but upon marriage to the Roman citizen, she took on that citizenship. So it's the same concept.
Yeah. People
same
always
concept.
Confuse the fact that we use English common law for much of our estate and property right laws. But when we formed a new form of government to unite the 13 states in a new constitutional republic, we used the teachings of Attell, who envisioned this new type of government, a written constitution, separate judiciary, and he defined in that book, The Law and Nature, Principle of Natural Law, what a natural born citizen is. We created a new federal government based on natural law and concepts that were coming out of Europe and the Enlightenment, not the old English common law and the monarchy. We just threw that off. We were allies with France. We were fighting in England. We were not trying to adopt English common law for our new federal government. We created a whole new type of government that was never before seen in the history of the world, and we did not get that idea from England and their common law. Is that correct, Mario? I'm sure you agree with me. That's why I'm saying it, but I know you do. But I wanted to get it out there for the listeners.
Yes, absolutely correct.
To Roman times as to a republic, right?
The republic goes back. Now, the framers, they studied republics, and they were very, of course, interested in knowing what made them and what made them fall. You know, what their weaknesses
and they studied
were.
The democracies of ancient Greece and, you know, where the people have the absolute, you know, no written constitution, just whatever the people want. In other words, mob rule.
But out of the Enlightenment, which you mentioned, that's very important because the framers studied the philosophers of the Enlightenment. Now, one tremendous source was John Locke. In the 1600s, he wrote his treatise on government. And the whole concept of Locke is consent of the governed. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now that's right in the Declaration of Independence. And that is the basis also of citizenship under the law of nations.
Mm-hmm.
See, the parents, they consent to be members. And then they can pass that on to their children. When the children are born, they inherit the consent of the parents to want to be citizens. Okay,
right.
So that's consistent with Republican government, where the people are sovereign. The people have the power. They consent to everything that goes on, including making their government and continuing under that government. We have elections. We continuously show our consent by electing people, and we can even change the Constitution. We have the consent,
sure,
to do, the power to do that. So it's all consistent with Enlightenment principles, consent. As a consent of the governed.
And a Republican form of government, these were the concepts coming out of Europe at the time, and our Constitution specifically says we shall be guaranteed a Republican form of government. The pledge allegiance to the flag says to the Republic for which we stand, not to the monarchy, not to the democracy, not to whatever,
right,
to a republic.
And just in case somebody in the listening audience, we're not talking about a capital R like Republican Party.
No.
We're talking about a form of government, a republic,
right,
versus a monarchy or oligarchy or theocracy. I mean, there's all different kinds of forms of government, dictatorships. A republic is basically, where the people have the power. The people, they vote, they give their consent. To have their leaders, and they can change them, anytime they want, and they have a constitution which limits the power of that government. That's a republic. That's what the United States is.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just wanted to throw something out here in the discussion real quick. When you go back to the founding days and they decided, they rejected Hamilton's ideas of just being born a citizen and went to a natural-born citizen. And I always throw out, When you want to learn something, you go back there, you ask yourself the five. Remember the five W's and an H: what, who, how, when, where, and why. The what is a natural born citizen clause in that presidential eligibility. The who put it there? Well, we know we have a copy of a letter from John Jay, written to General George Washington, who was president of the Constitutional Convention, and. How, again, would be the letter from Jay to Washington when the letter dated 25 July 1787. Okay, that was during the convention. Where it happened was Philadelphia. That's where Washington was, and the letter was delivered to him from Jay. And why? Why did Jay send the letter? Because he wanted to caution Washington to make sure that the new president, who was going to be the commander-in-chief of all our military, and he said this specifically in the letter, that there be a strong check against foreign influence, and that the president shall be none other than a natural-born citizen, because that in natural-born citizenship, sole allegiance to the United States, unity of citizenship at birth, no dual citizenships, no foreign allegiances. What stronger check against foreign influence can you have that? A child born in the country of two citizen parents, that will give you the best chance of disconnecting any foreign influence on that future person if he becomes the president and commander of our military. So we know the why. They wanted a person who, after the founding generation was gone, there was a grandfather clause in there for the current original citizens, but afterwards, they had the future generation had to be a natural-born citizen, because they wanted somebody with sole allegiance to the United States from birth to be the only person to be the commander of the military. Now we got Obama. We see what we get. He's exactly what the founders and framers did not want to get command of our military. Now, does that make sense to you, that what I just laid out there, the what, who, how, when, where, and why, and you agree with that all, Mario, or is there something you want to add to it?
Yeah, and I would like to add something to what you mentioned about Alexander mm-hmm. Hamilton. Now, Jay did write that letter, mm-hmm. as you mentioned,
right.
July 25, 1787. Now, but here's something very, very important. Going back to Alexander Hamilton, June 18, 1787, he gave a speech to the convention.
Okay.
This was his sketch of a plan, and it talked about a governor. It didn't talk about a president,
right.
And he didn't mention yet there about the eligibility requirements, citizen,
mm-hmm.
born a citizen. But what he said that's very important. He said, and I quote, he said that one of the weaknesses of republics, now here we are, of republics,
mm-hmm.
was
mm-hmm.
that they were, quote, liable to foreign influence and corruption, men of little character, comma, acquiring great power become easily the tools of intermeddling neighbors. End of
there
quote.
There you go again. Foreign influence. That's what
now,
they want
isn't
to prevent.
That something? That's really powerful because that's
so now
Alexander
we got a
Hamilton
president who was
June.
Born a British subject. Can you imagine any more foreign influence than that?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Foreign money that's being poured into the
exactly.
Campaigns.
The Saudi Arabians and whoever, who else we know was giving them money? Maybe the Chinese communists with bags like Gore.
Well,
Mario is very studied on this, and I learned a lot from Mario over the years. And, you know, I brought my knowledge in, and together we know what the founders and framers intended. We know the what, who, how, when, why, where the freaking two political parties tried to pass laws in Congress to redefine natural-born citizens. For the last 20 years, they tried about 8 times, and you can go to www.articletoolsuperpac.com/issues.html and read all about those laws, but they couldn't get it. So what did they do? In 2008, both parties decided to run questionable natural-born citizens, and on that basis, they both parties kept their mouth shut, and the media sold the rest of the country a bill of goods, and now we're in the mess we're in. They want to run anybody, any way they can get citizenship. Next thing, they'll want to run anchor babies for president. I mean, we're just going down the tube here.
Oh, trust me, you're preaching to the choir. One of our listeners, I'm thinking maybe they may be a plant or an agent provocateur, but
probably they follow us around wherever we're going to be. They follow us.
Well, we love them because we want to be tested, so they can shoot all they want.
Yeah, that's why the debaters didn't show up because they know we can handle.
Yeah, well, they didn't show up, you know, because who knows why the other side didn't show up. But anyways, the RC Radio. States, Hamilton never submitted his version of the wording to the convention. Kirchner and other birthers love to lie about that. So I asked the listeners, state.
Well, there's no written evidence that he submitted it to the convention on the minutes of the convention, but there's a lot of stuff that never made it in the minutes of the convention. But Hamilton's thinking, as Mario cited, was going around in June. Everybody was knowing these thoughts were, do you want to have just a citizen, a born citizen, or a natural-born citizen? There were a lot of things that didn't make it into the Constitution, the Convention, like the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment, Fourth Amendment. That doesn't mean that that things that came before the founders and framers were not incorporated by ideas that came after the convention, like the Bill of Rights did. The letter that Hamilton sent just confirmed what he was trying to convince people to do. He wanted born a citizen. He wanted a little looser structure because, you know, Hamilton, I believe, Mario, wasn't born in the USA, was he?
No, he was born in the islands.
Right. Now, he had exemption for the grandfather clause, but he wanted a little looser structure. He wanted born a president.
Yeah,
so
let me just want to say something about this.
Those old butts want to nitpick about stuff, but they don't want to talk about the June speech that Hamilton made.
Well, here's the thing about this RC business that I've seen this now for years. Okay, first of all, there's two different documents that we're talking about. We're talking about the sketch, okay, which was in the speech. Okay, didn't talk about the born citizen. And the proposed draft of a constitution that came later on, this is what this RC audience is talking about. And that draft of the constitution, document number 2, that was never officially presented to the convention. Okay, so what? So big deal. Okay? He gave
that doesn't
it to
mean
Madison.
That people didn't know about it. That doesn't mean people didn't know
right.
about it.
Right, they know about it. And even Madison, in his notes, Farren says this. He says Farren wrote that Hamilton gave this, he called it a paper, to Madison at the end of the convention, and that Hamilton, quote, now here's a quote, would have wished to be proposed by the convention. He had stated the principles of it in the course of the deliberations, end of quote. That's right. On page 619 of Ferrand. So right there.
But they want to nitpick about BS like that. When the fact of the matter under discussion though, is natural born citizen clause is in there, not born a citizen or a lesser term. It says natural born, and we know what the founders and framers meant by it. And they just want to steer us off on tangential arguments about minutia and what can be proven literally with a written letter back in 1787 that came in after the official convention closed, even though it was discussed, the foreign influence issue was discussed since June, as Mario just attested to earlier.
Yeah. And there's so much that happened in that convention that we don't know about because
exactly.
It was, you know, quote-unquote secret.
Exactly.
Okay. And it's all,
we
it's,
have
it's,
a copy of John Jay.
That,
we have a copy of John Jay's letter that was delivered to the General Washington, the president of the convention, and he wrote back to Jay saying that Jay wrote it, called it a hint, and Washington took it, you know, right to the convention and changed it to natural born citizen.
Here's something else. Imagine Hamilton taking all his time to write this proposed draft of a constitution and that he never discussed it with anybody in the convention.
Right.
It's absurd.
Right.
It's
just
absurd
nitpicking.
To think, oh, well, he never officially presented it, so therefore nobody knows anything about
it. They want to change the subject. They're trying to say a natural-born citizen is identical with three parallel lines, identical, logically identical to a citizen at birth. Well, you know, trees are plants, but not all plants are trees. A natural-born citizen is a citizen at birth, but not all citizens at birth are natural-born citizens. Those two adjectives in front of citizen mean something, and the natural refers, in any legal term, natural refers to natural law other than man-made law. Correct, Mario?
Absolutely, and even the text of our laws shows that theory to be wrong. The very text, if you look at all the acts of Congress, okay, they make citizens at birth, and they call them citizens of the United States. They don't call them natural-born citizens. If you look at the 14th Amendment.
And in the 1790.
The 14th Amendment makes citizens at birth, right? The
right.
14th Amendment.
Yep.
What does it call them? It doesn't say natural-born citizens.
Exactly.
It says citizens of the United States.
And adjectives in front of a noun modify the noun. And now let me put you another example. Congress passed a naturalization law in 1790, and they said children born across the seas of U.S. citizen parents, plural, shall be considered a natural-born citizen. Now, they repealed that because they knew they made a mistake in 1795 and took natural-born out and just made them citizens. But they, even in the 1790 Act, they said they shall be considered. They didn't say they were.
Right,
correct,
exactly.
Mario?
And if you look at that language, shall be considered, that if you go back into the old English Naturalization Acts, 1600s, 1700s, they actually took people, and even here in the colonies, right? They took people who were clearly aliens and became subjects after their birth, and they called them natural-born subjects.
Right.
They said, now you're a natural-born subject. Now you have the rights of a natural-born subject. But clearly
right.
those people were not citizens from birth or subjects from birth. They're
right.
only given the rights of that. And that's what happened with the 1790 Act. They were only given the privileges and the immunities of a natural-born citizen, except, of course, they couldn't be the president because the Constitution said you had to be a natural-born citizen, not just have the rights of one, you know, given to you by a naturalization act. But it caused a lot of confusion. So in 1795, with the leadership of James Madison – They repealed the whole thing, and then the new act, 1795, says shall be considered as citizens of the United
right.
States, which then it's always been that way, always, and that's why Cruz, the very Naturalization Act, which is the 1952 Act, which applies to Cruz, says that he's a citizen of the United States. It does not say natural born citizen. So it's a big scam, a snow job, whatever you want to call it, taking advantage of people not knowing all these minutiae, all these intricacies, and then of course you got the media who the feel good media. Oh yeah, everybody's a natural born citizen. The whole world
is
a natural born citizen.
The two political parties that want to run, who's ever sexy, they don't care about the Constitution.
Yeah.
Now the law that Congress passed that Cruz hypocritically is pointing to. It's called Title 8, Section 1401. That just defines who's a citizen at birth, not a natural-born citizen. But the words natural and natural-born or natural are not even in that law.
No.
And if you go further back up under Title 8, it's a subsection of a section titled Naturalization Acts of the United States or some paraphrasing like that.
Absolutely.
So it's a naturalization law. They are naturalizing these people at birth. So Ted Cruz is a naturalized citizen, if he's a citizen at all, because some think his mother became a Canadian citizen up in Canada, but we can't get any evidence of it yet. People have been looking. But if she was naturalized, if Cruz's mother naturalized, Ted Cruz isn't even an American citizen.
That's correct. If she wasn't a citizen of the United States when he was born, Ted Cruz is not even a U.S. citizen.
Well, gentlemen, maybe you can enlighten me. There's two things that one thing I know, but two things that I've heard. The first one is that Cruz kept his Canadian citizenship until 2014. Honestly, I haven't, done the research to see if that's entirely accurate. The second.
Yeah, that's true. He did. He just renounced.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. All right, cool. Secondly.
So he's admitting he was born a dual citizen. He was born in foreign influence. So he's not a natural born. He may not even be a citizen at all.
And he says that he didn't know he was a Canadian citizen? That's the most absurd thing. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I like Cruz's politics, but I don't like what he's doing on this. He's being very hypocritical of. He's a constitutional scholar, but in this, all of a sudden, he forgets everything. He paraphrases and he parses his words.
Now, right? Now, secondly, his wife was a member. She was the author of the North American Union, and she also worked for, some of these bankster, international bankster.
That gets into politics, which is not a constitutional issue that Mario and I, we really can't address, but that gets into political arguments against Cruz. I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about the natural-born citizen issue and how I'm so disappointed that he's not being forthright on the truth on the issue. He knows the truth.
Yeah, politics has nothing to do with defining a natural-born citizen. It's strictly it's a bright-line test, born in the country to citizen parents. You could be white, blue, green. You could be a communist, a capitalist, a socialist. Doesn't matter what you are.
Strongest possible check from a point of view of citizen status against foreign influence.
Right.
Yeah. The rest of it, of course, is politics, whether the people want somebody or not. That's the political decision.
Right. We're not here to talk about that. I understand that maybe on other parts of your show you've covered all that stuff, and I've heard all that too. And believe me, in the back of my mind, when you get into the voting booth, the politics enter into all these discussions. But for the night's show, I wanted to talk about natural-born citizen, and that's why we're here. So if you have any questions on that, you've got the world's expert here, Mario Apuzzo. And as far as the OBUTs, we've lost every case on this. That's because the courts have turned them all away on technicalities of standing or jurisdiction. Mario can tell us more, but they don't want to deal with it. They say go to Congress. Congress says go to the courts. They're playing a back and forth hot potato.
Well, let me ask you guys this: as far as the courts, now we have a guest on Thursdays, and we cover constitutional and common law. What are you guys' thoughts? Now, because the court system, it's not a de jure court. It's a de facto court. So, of course, they're not going to side with you because, it would ruin their thing they got going on.
I'll let Mario address the courts.
Okay. Well, Mario, I'm sure that's something you've heard before, right, as far as de jure, de facto, the Corporations Act of, 1871. I'm not a history scholar. I am not a constitutional scholar. Let me put it out there, I'm the backup goalie tonight. Our starting goalie is hurt. Okay.
Well,
so you guys got me. I'm sorry.
Talk about the United States as a corporation and everything, I don't want to go there, really. I want to stay Constitution.
Let me just, get that real simple, okay? The Constitution created our government, okay? That's it. I mean, that's where it is. It's got three branches of government. And it gives it its limited powers, And it even tells
we the people created the Constitution, which created our government. Can I put it that way, Mario?
Yeah, the Constitution.
Okay.
So now, whether you want to call it a corporation or whatever you want to call it, that really, you know, I don't see how that matters. Okay. Well, first of all, it's not a quote unquote corporation, because the Constitution created the government. Now, the people, of course, you know, we created the government, but the Constitution says what the powers are. Okay, so it's not a matter of, now this thing about common law and all that sort of thing that you mentioned, de jure and de facto. First of all, anything that's allowed by law, of course, the Constitution is the supreme law. Then we have the laws of the United States. Then we have treaties. Okay, that's all on the federal level. Okay, and we also have a common law that's on a federal level. That's national common law. This is federal level. The states, we have common law there too, coming out of the English common law, which was adopted, selectively adopted, and then brought forward until abrogated by state legislatures. Now, some of the old English common law still continues, the principles in the states. And
yeah,
of course, states also have statutes. States also have constitutions. But the point about this de jure and de facto, anything that's allowed by law is de jure. De jure, okay, which is a Latin word meaning by law. Anything that exists in fact is not necessarily stamped as official by a law, but we still do it. You could say it's de facto. Now, I use that term de facto to describe our current president.
Me too.
Yeah, de facto President Obama, because he's there. He acts like the president. He has all the powers. He goes on and on. He's going to do two terms. But as far as I'm concerned, and of course Commander Kirchner, he doesn't have the powers of the executive did not devolve upon him legitimately under the Constitution, because he's not a natural born citizen.
And
so
I want to throw out
something. He's a de jure president. He's a de facto
president.
Right.
All these Latin terms, the term natural born citizen existed prior to the Constitution. It comes from natural law. They put it in the Constitution. They knew what it meant. It was mentioned. Natural born was mentioned in a treaty negotiation between France and the United States about 10 years prior to that. They knew exactly what the term meant, and that's why they put it in there as a strong check. So they made it the law of the land when they put it in there, right, Mario? They made it the law of the land that the president had to be a natural born citizen for future presidents.
Yes. Now that's the Constitution. See, when I say that, you have to understand that. You could say the Constitution. You could say the laws of the United States made in the pursuance thereof. You could say treaties. Okay, that's right in Article. If you look at Article 3, the jurisdiction of the courts talks about that. And if you look at Article 6, which is the Supremacy Clause, again it repeats those things. It repeats the Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties. Okay, those are now what's not in there stated in the Constitution is common law. That's not there. Okay, clearly not the English common law. That was never adopted by the convention.
Well, common law would be court decisions.
They thought it was an illegitimate guide to define terms in the Constitution. James Madison clearly says it that you can't define terms in the Constitution under the common law, English common law or statutes. It was an illegitimate guide. So they looked to the law of nations to define terms.
Common law.
Congress was given the power to define things. Congress. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, then, in other words, we build up our own U.S. common law as Supreme Court make decisions, right?
Right. Exactly.
Now,
and that's federal common law.
You took my case to the U.S. Supreme Court. You can practice law. You're registered with the U.S. Supreme Court, correct?
Yes, I'm admitted to the U.S. Supreme Court. Correct.
Right. So some people question your abilities and everything. And Mario is fluent in several languages. He studied this constitutional issue of Article 2 for years. I don't think there's anybody in the United States that's more fluent on the Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 than Attorney Mario Puzo. Maybe Dr. Herb Titus, who also agrees with him. But those two guys are right up there as far as I'm concerned.
I appreciate that, Commander.
You are a constitutional scholar on Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5, no matter what anybody says.
Well, I've been practicing law for, 32 years.
Sure.
And you can read,
Rattel, the source of that, you know, that definition, that term in the original French. You know what it meant.
Yes, and that's another big fraud.
Yeah.
I'm laughing because the Obots, and I love to use that word because they call us birthers, right? So they're the Obots.
Mm-hmm.
They try to give these crazy translations of the French that mm-hmm. That parents doesn't mean parents, it means like extended families and all, like uncles and aunts and grandfathers and all. It's so absurd. I mean, every translation of Vattel in English says parents. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Supreme Court, starting with John Marshall, Chief Justice John Marshall, says parents. Parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dred Scott says parents. Minor says parents. Juan K. Mark says parents. Even lower courts say parents. Even like, you know, legislators say parents. It's just unbelievable. And they come up with this thing that it's not parents, it's extended families. It's just, and it even talks about the fathers there. They call it
Yeah, well, in the case of Rubio and Jindal, the parents don't have either one as citizens when they were born. So they're lacking both of them. With Cruz and Obama, they don't have a citizen father. So they don't have parents, as you're pointing out.
Yeah. And again, you need parents because here's another concept that's very important: jus soli and jus sanguinis. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Jus soli, basically the right of the soil; jus sanguinis, right of blood. It means if you're born on land, you get certain, you know, or country, you get, you know, certain privileges or rights. If you're born to certain people, you get certain rights. Okay, so our system of citizenship has both. You know,
mm-hmm.
You could be born here and subject to the jurisdiction. And you become a citizen. That's Jews solely, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a mixture. It's a mixture of Jews solely.
Now,
because
you
the
said
pure,
citizen.
The pure,
you didn't put an adjective in front of citizen. You just said a citizen.
Right,
okay.
Right. And then we have Jus sanguinis, which is if you're born to a U.S. citizen parent, even just one, in a foreign country, you still become a U.S. citizen from birth, a naturalized U.S. citizen from birth. So we use both. But when it comes to a natural-born citizen, it's not an or.
You got to have a three-legged stool. You got to have
yes.
Father, the mother, because of the Cable Act of 1922, and where you're born to be a natural-born citizen. Because otherwise, you're going to inherit or get some way dual citizenship at birth, which means foreign influence, foreign allegiance. You know, if you're born with dual citizenship, you're required to be. If you go to that country, they could put you in their army.
Yes.
They could force you to do a lot of things if you're a dual citizen. You're obligated to both countries. We don't want a person who's in command of our military. What if the president's father at the Cuban Missile Crisis would have been living in Moscow, a Moscow citizen? The president, the commander-in-chief, is going to launch, you know, make a strike if he knows his father is alive in Moscow or wherever, Iran or wherever.
Yeah.
We don't want a person who has any foreign influence by birth.
Well, you know, it even goes deeper than that, Commander. It goes into psychology.
Yep.
And there's actual psychological studies done on allegiance and, you know, dual citizenship and that sort of thing.
Well, look at Obama. What did he name his book?
Yeah.
It really goes deeper into the
yeah. psyche of a person that, you know, your heart, you know, your heart, your love of country becomes
right.
Questionable because you have this – you know, I don't know what you want to call it.
You have these dreams of your father's country.
Yeah, we call it allegiance. I mean, which means mm-hmm. basically allegiance coming from the Latin allegare means to tie. That's what it is. It's a tie. You have a tie to something. Okay. Now you could have a tie to many things. You could have a tie to a religion, a tie to a country. Even a tie to a team, you know, like, you know, somebody, they love the Yankees, they love the Mets. That's their allegiance. That's their tie. So that's the problem with, you know, not
right.
having a commander-in-chief, which is your last defense. That's your last one, okay? Not Congress, but the commander-in-chief, he's got to be 100%, you know, no ties to anything that's foreign. He can't hesitate. If he's got to pull the trigger, you got to pull it. You can't hesitate.
And the military who serve under him don't want any doubt that his sole allegiance is to the United States.
We don't have that
today with Obama. We've got people being sent into rules of engagement in foreign wars that the people don't trust the commander-in-chief who's sending them there.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Commander. You know, since I've been alive, okay, did I see a situation where the president of the United States does something and the people, not necessarily 100% of the people, but a great percentage of the people, they have a suspicion. Oh, like take the Iran nuclear thing now, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's a percentage of the American people who actually think that he's trying to help Iran get a nuclear bomb. That's amazing.
You got Valerie Jarrett as advisor, an Iranian citizen, and John Kerry's son-in-law is an Iranian.
But isn't that amazing? How can
we as a nation?
I wonder
if we have suspicions.
How can we as a nation, some of us, okay, I don't know what the percentage is, think that oh, wait a minute, he's actually working for Iran, he's not working for the United States. That is the most unbelievable thing that I've experienced in my lifetime.
Well, they might be taking 1% of that $150 billion Iran's going to get and donating 1% back to Obama's library in Chicago. That's we have a president commander-in-chief de facto that we do not trust. He's a citizen of the world, not a natural-born citizen of the United States. We cannot trust this man.
Yeah, that's
exactly
the
way the people in the military feel.
That's really what happens because of this natural-born citizen issue. It really, yeah, whether people say it or not, and the media, they refuse to acknowledge it or even talk about it. If you see the jokes that are made on it, it's always about, oh, yeah, they said that he wasn't born in Hawaii, right? They make like little, you know, jokes. But why don't they talk about the question of allegiance and being
exactly.
Born to citizen parents? How come you never hear them talk about that?
Being a citizen gets you protection from the country that you are a citizen of. In return, they demand your allegiance. We do not want a commander-in-chief with dual citizenship and dual allegiance requirements on them.
Any other questions, Randy?
Yeah, any questions there, Randy?
Well, I'm looking at – I don't know if we'll have time to get to it. Had a couple of people wanted to ask about the Supreme Court ruling in 1898 that said the children of Chinese aliens are eligible for –
They're citizens, not natural.
Yes, well, go ahead. What's the question?
Let me find it. They're typing so much
I
want to hear the question.
Okay.
The Supreme Court in 1988, supposedly according to C.E. Hughes, listener, that the children of Chinese aliens were eligible for the presidency.
Oh my God.
Is that the question?
That's a statement from listener C.E. Hughes.
Okay.
That's untrue.
Yeah, well, okay, now that's a matter of interpretation, okay? Now, if you read the decision of Wong Kim Ark, 1898, the court said that a child born in the United States to a domiciled and permanent resident alien parents who are neither
illegals, Mario.
No,
resident,
no, right. Domiciled
right.
And permanent resident.
Legal residents.
Alien parents who are neither foreign diplomats nor military invaders are citizens of the United States from the moment of birth by virtue of the 14th Amendment. That's the
citizens.
Holding.
Citizens.
Okay?
That's the holding, not natural born.
It doesn't say natural born. In the case, the court even distinguished a natural born citizen from a citizen
right.
At birth by birth in the country, which was what they did under the 14th Amendment. The court, they went through a tortured analysis, which is, it's very questionable what they did. But now I'm not taking issue with, I'm not saying that the court did not give the proper definition of a natural-born citizen.
It expanded 14th Amendment birthright citizenship.
Right.
But it did not determine what Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 meant. Not at all.
Not at all. It doesn't even mention the framers. It doesn't mention the framers or how they defined a natural-born citizen. So how could the court say that somebody could be a president if they don't even mention the framers or how the framers defined it or how Article 2 defines it. It's just unbelievable that somebody would actually come to that conclusion.
The holding didn't say a thing about who'd be president. It just said they are now considered a citizen.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with being a president, a citizen.
But forget even the word president, okay? Mm-hmm. At least tell me that you're talking about Article 2, okay? Tell me you're talking about the framers. Tell me that. Which Minor did that? The court,
right.
Minor versus Happer said the framers.
Right.
You know, when they drafted and adopted the Constitution, defined a natural-born citizen as a child born in the country to citizen parents. The court said the framers, when they drafted the Constitution.
So
okay,
it's another OBOT distortion of the 1898
law. Yeah, Juan Kimar doesn't even talk. And here's something else. They called it international law, okay, which it was called the Law of Nations originally. So
or
when
principles
Juan
of natural law.
Along,
the full title had natural law on it, though.
Yeah, when Juan Kimar came along, it was international law they started to call it, okay? Because that was many years later. The court analyzed international law as of the time of the 14th Amendment, okay? Mm-hmm. It didn't look at the Law of Nations as of the time that the Constitution, the original Constitution, was drafted. So you know they're not even looking at the Natural Born Citizen Clause. They're looking at the 14th Amendment. And then they're looking at international law. It's not even close.
Well, gentlemen, I'm sorry to interrupt. We've only got 30 seconds left.
Can we quickly put out our websites?
Yeah, give your websites out real
Mario,
quick.
Go first. Go
All
ahead,
right, that's Puzo, P-U-Z-O, .blogspot.com.
And mine is protectourliberty.org, protectourliberty.org, and cdrkirchner.wordpress.com, cdrkirchner.wordpress.com.
Okay, well, I'll make sure that I put this up on our website and on our Facebook page. Thank you both for being here. Let's do this again.
Next time, get some cruise bots on here with us. We want somebody we can take on one-on-one, not anonymous people in a chat room.
Yeah, well, we tried that, but they didn't want to show up. But we're out of time. Thanks, guys, and we'll have you back for 2 hours next
Good
time.
Good job, Mario. So,
thank you, Commander. Good job also. And thank you, Randy.
Thank you for having me on. Bye-bye.
It was a pleasure having you.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for spending your time with us on the Wake Up Mission Show.